Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Mike Armstrong podcast show. And this morning, we're joined by John Attridge, who is the founder of global business BBX. And he's from Australia, currently residing in the southeast of England. And we're going to have a little chat about BBX and entrepreneurship in general and just see how we can help each other. So how are you doing today, John? You okay?
Yeah, good morning, Mike. Yeah, it's nice nice to be with the program. I know we've known each other for a little while now through normal activities in real live events and what have you. I've been enjoyed a couple of trips over to sunny Cardiff and the Motorpoint Arena and Cardiff City Stadium and enjoyed the Infobiz events over there and the associated stuff afterwards.
Yeah, brilliant. And we've always enjoyed having you. And BBX has always been a really good idea and a really good concept. And, you know, the more we can help you spread that message, the better. So tell us a little bit about BBX. Tell us a little bit about how it came about. And tell us a little bit about, you know, the journey, if you like.
Yeah, well, that's it's a story that goes back now, Mike, to 1989 in at that point, I had a car rental business on the Gold Coast in Queensland in Australia, which is where I'm from. And so we had all these lovely Mazda car, brand new cars that we'd rent out to the tourist market. We'd enjoyed a particularly great year, more than 100% occupancy, if people think that through, the year before when we had World Expo in Brisbane. So as fast as we could clean a car, out it went out again. But then the next year, in September, we had a nationwide commercial pilot strike. And what that did was cut down every single commercial flight in Australia. And we thought, oh, okay, that's pretty tough. It was okay in the first, you know, week or two because people were stuck and had to have a car. But then as soon as they got to back to where they wanted to go, all of a sudden, my biggest problem was where to park cars. Because no one was renting cars because no one was getting off aircraft. They were driving to the destination. And this strike went on for 5 months. So in month two of this thing, I think we'd rented one car for 1 week. And so we had all the overhead of running the business, all the payments, lease payments to Mazda, the staff wanted paying, the landlord wanted their rents and so forth, but we didn't have any revenue. So a little bit like COVID, and I think it was Mike Tyson that once said that everybody's got a plan until you get a smack in the face. And so which you couldn't see this coming. And we thought, well, we didn't know how long it was going to go on for. We needed to do something. And everybody that I was associated with at the time that owned a business on the Gold Coast, the hotels and the restaurants and the mechanics and the media people and all the accountants and the solicitors and everybody else that had a business, we're all in the same boat. So we had a meeting and there was about 50 of my closest collaboration business owners. We got together and we had an influence from a guy who had seen this strategy called a digital trade credit. And back in these days, this is pre-internet, it was the idea of creating your own currency out of selling spare capacity to one another. So a car sat on the driveway, if it didn't go out, was worth nothing. So if I sold it, and back in those days, we got a check. So I've sold my rented my car for $100 to the solicitor. He would write me a trade check. So his account would go negative $100 and mine would go positive. I'd then have some currency to then go and buy some marketing or pay an accountant or whatever I wanted to do. So we created our own currency, used checkbooks and, you know, the old debit zero system on bank ledgers that banks used back in those days. And so if you fast forward two exits, I've sold the whole thing twice and come back in. 31 years later, add the internet, add mobile phones, add technology, add apps, and everything's done digitally. Our whole network now, directly connected and indirectly through the International Reciprocal Trade Association, there's about 480,000 businesses in 32 countries.
Yeah. Take off. Also, all you needed was the internet to just make it go sort of global like a virus.
So that's pretty much what we do is exactly the same as what it was 31 years ago, but with technology, it allows us to do it a whole lot more seamlessly.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, I love bartering. There's exchange of value. You know, all money, people are so money obsessed, but all money is an IOU. You know, you've done something for me, I do something for you.
And I speak on money and why the fiat system is fundamentally broken, but that's another story.
Yeah, okay.
But bartering is okay, or exchange, or swapping, or trading, or whatever term you want to use. But you've got to have what each other wants at the same time for the same value. And if any of that breaks down, then, you know, the transaction falls down. So with our system, it allows the free movement of a trade of services for other trades of services without a direct reciprocation at the same time for the same value. And so you get the benefit and the value rather than the complication that's created by a direct exchange.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I understand that. I'm lucky because I offer something which has high commodity value and is of interest to everyone, sales and marketing and consultancy and training and so many different things. But if you're like a friend of mine from the Intrabiz Network, Matt Levan, he's an ecologist. You know, not many people need him, not many people use him, you know. So with somebody like that, you know, it's hard for you to barter with people who don't want value you got to give. And therefore, yep, you need a triangular or a circular system, which allows you to, you know, able to be used by a much more diverse group of people and businesses, etc.
Yeah, and it takes another step too, Mike, beyond the direct exchange, and that is you're capturing some revenue that would have otherwise gone to waste. Like my car, if it's sat on the driveway saying rent me, all the overhead's there, but if it doesn't go out today, there's no revenue at all, that's fiat or otherwise. So, and that's the same for any business. So if you're not selling your time or your hotel room piece of stock, whatever that is, if it's sat on the shelf, then by selling into this community, you're creating a second revenue stream over and above your current. And I think that's the point that a lot of people miss.
Yeah, definitely. And that is important. And and the other thing I think which is important as well, and I think this is where you come in with your monetary angle, I'm pretty sure, because I studied economics in college. So I'm pretty big picture, you know, economy, size thinking, etc. And obviously, money goes down in value, and especially no more so than right now when it's being pumped into systems or whatever. So actually, the paper IOUs that they give you drops in value over time. Whereas when you barter exchange value for value, then that value proposition is rigid. It's stuck in stone and it doesn't change. So I guess that's probably what you was going to say for another day that I'm always interested in probing on, which is why I wanted to mention it, because that is the beauty of the system, is that it's in control of the person, the barter with the other person, of the value, and it's not controlled by other people to manipulate the value, which could negatively affect you in some way.
Yeah, and so we don't have to control price, because it's up to buyer and seller in economic conditions to agree a price. So that's the beauty of our digital trade credit. It's pegged to the pound here in the UK, but buyer and seller determine at the end of the day what something's worth.
Yeah, and what I'm really interested in probing as well, because again, I'm that type of person, is how does the tax system and all of that, have you had any conversations with different people in different countries regarding all of this? And is there any information you can share that I would find fascinating about some of those conversations?
Well, there's no secret about it. When we very first started in Australia, we sought the Australian government out. We wanted to be proactive and make sure that we got an industry operational procedure that was stamped and gazetted by the government. So we reached out to the Australian Securities Commission at the time, and we got a ruling under their taxation ruling IT 2668, which gained that one digital trade credit was equal in value to one Aussie dollar for accounting and every other purpose. So we wanted to be squeaky clean. We wanted to be upfront with people and say, look, this is not a tax dodge. We're not trying to create a black economy here, although some people would like us to do that. What we want to do is create a legitimate operation that allows accounting to be exactly as it would be an Australian dollar, a pound, or a Chinese yuan, or what have you. So The short answer is, Mike, that one digital trade credit equals £1 sterling here in the UK for accounting and every other purpose. So the practical implication of that is that if you earn a digital trade credit by renting that car, then that will create a tax liability as additional revenue, and it will also create a GST or a VAT liability if applicable. But then on the flip side, when you buy some marketing or an accounting or whatever it happens to be, the government said, well, even though you're not spending any pounds sterling on Aussie dollars, we'll give you a tax deduction in Aussie dollars or pounds sterling for any legitimate purchases. And you will also get a VAT credit for anything that's also applicable. So the short answer is there's no advantage, no disadvantage, and it's treated exactly the same. You put it through your books, exactly the same as your current fiat bank account.
Yeah, brilliant. And that's great to have that information and to share that out there with people who, you know, some people, for example, don't think of the questions they need to ask, and some people are too polite to ask them. So I like to ask the probing questions that that some people won't ask to get to the crux of some things and to get some unique content as well. So I'm going to ask another one now as well then. So obviously you've been around a long time. You've gone through three, four decades of business. What are some of the things you've learned along the way, John?
I actually do a podcast on it, Mike, if we had a separate time. And I just did one last week. It went for about 90 minutes on the 16 things that took me four decades to get to the number one that I do. So it's a presentation on just 16 different things on life that I didn't invent, that I've just seen, that I've got case studies that I deal with. But without stealing all the thunder from that presentation, to get to the number one thing that I think that people should bear in mind when they start any endeavor, Mike, whether it's a business or a project or a life event of some kind, is to the Stephen Covey book, which influenced me greatly, which was to start with the end in mind. And there's so many businesses out there that they set up their shop, they hang their sign out, they build their website, they start some marketing, they open their doors, and they don't know where they're going. And to me, that's just crazy. You know, and I see and I talk about around the world on how some people put more effort into planning their holidays than they do their business. And so, you know, that's the number one thing if I had to choose something that people could focus in on and in three stages, Mike.
Yeah.
The first thing has to be the why you want to do something. So if you don't have a reason behind what you're doing, you just wander aimlessly. And then the second thing, and I had an interview on my Quantum Business Show, you might have caught up with a mate of mine that I hadn't seen for 40 years, a guy called Alan Peace. And Alan has wrote the book on body language, the original body language.
I see that.
He wrote Why Men Cry, Why Women Cry and Men Lie, why men don't listen and women can't read maths. Sold 300 million books, this guy. So I've known him since back in the 70s. And he talks about not only after the why, then deciding on what the what it is that you want to achieve, and then don't let the how sayers interfere, because too many people, they don't have a plan for a start. But those that do, don't start with the why. They then don't focus on the what and allow the people that say, what do I want to do, John? Oh, I want to go to the moon. And then all the how people come along and say, well, hang on, there's no atmosphere up there. You haven't got a space suit. And John, there's no rockets. So, you know, what are you going to do? And then there's no rocket fuel. And then it's, you know, it's not environmentally friendly. And what if this happens? And what if that happens? And so what the how people talk you out of your what. So starting with the end in mind, starting with the why, working on the what, and not listening to the how.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And if you want to send me the link for that episode, then I'll stick it in my descriptions and drive people to that episode, because that sounds like a fascinating listen. And 16 things that you can learn off someone who's been there, done it, got the T-shirt over a four-decade period. That is like gold. That is like bombs. Bombs, 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 big bombs, like, you know. So, highly recommend that. And I actually, I'm on the same sort of mission. I always tell people to start with the the why, and then the end in sight, etc. You know, such a big goal that looks so big that you can't achieve it, that you have to turn into the person capable of achieving it. And that sort of like, you know, resonates with me so much. And I myself, I'll put it out there because I love putting it out there to the universe and getting that internal, external pressure that I'm doing it. You know, my why is to help as many entrepreneurs on the planet. And my what is I'm going to do it via speaking in public arenas all around the world. And I'm going to use that to monetize into a big trust fund, which I'm then going to help other people to get on their journey of their why and their what. And encourage them, educate them, help them, support them, fund them in instances where they can justify they need some funding, and they got the right ambition, the right attitude, and the right willingness to learn and develop. That's my mission. That's what I'm on a mission to do. And I think I think if you start with the end in mind and then work your way back, it's much easier to plan the journey, which is how I educated to people. You know, you try to go to China without a plan, you know, walking or whatever, you could end up anywhere. Like, you know what I mean?
You've got to get the big 9-inch brush out and paint the picture with the 9-inch brush, not the little fiddly fine ones as well. So that's part of the thing. So, you know, for anybody out there, Mike, just I always say, you know, you want to go on holiday. Yeah. Okay. So tell me about what you're going to be doing. And, you know, they'd research the destination. They'd research the restaurants that were available, the sightseeing and any other things that were there, how you'd get from A to B. So there's a whole lot of stuff. And it's exactly the same as planning your business. You know, you want to see where your end is. Might work all your way back. Work all the steps out and then go for it.
Yeah, definitely. And a big part of mine is goal setting as well. So you have that big goal, which most people have, but they don't put the 3 or 4 or 5 things you need to achieve, be able to achieve that big goal. And if you break it down to those 3, 4, 5 little things, and then you actually do the daily rituals, the daily tasks, the daily little things that are going to help you achieve each one of those sort of 4, 5, 6 big goals. And then all of a sudden, that big goal don't look so far away because you've done lots of things consistently and persistently, and all in the right direction, heading towards those 4 or 5 things. And then all of a sudden, that big, massive thing that looked out of reach is like within reach. It's like you can touch it almost. And actually, a lot of the time, you change it. Because it's within reach, you start adding more things to it. Because, you know, we're ever evolving, we're ever developing. Our goals keep changing and growing as we get near to them or as we hit them or reach them. I'm a big believer in helping people and educating people. And that's what they got to do, because I think people, they get into business, they haven't got a plan or a strategy, they don't know what they're doing, they haven't got the end in mind, they run around like a headless chicken, burn themselves out and go and do something else for someone. And if actually this was educated in schools, so it was actually taught to people in the curriculum, we'd have a much better society of entrepreneurs, of business people, of people. We'd have a happier society, we'd have a more fulfilled society. I have issues with the education system, the fact that it was set up in like the 50s and the 60s around the Industrial Revolution. And the Industrial Revolution has ended and the tech revolution has begun, and they're working from home and the multiple streams of income and all of these things. And we're still teaching people and preparing them for the Industrial Revolution and how to be good employees, like, you know?
Don't get me started. It's many people confuse when I post that the education system is fundamentally broken and think that I'm having a go at teachers. Are there, they're doing a job, they've got a curriculum that they follow, they haven't created any of this. But when you think, a teacher has never ever left school, a university lecturer has, you know, 99% of the time has never been out of the education system. Yeah. So they have only read stuff out of books. They haven't started a business themselves and grown a business and found all the pain points of the initial stage and then the scale-up stage and then the exit stage. So you can read everything like that in a book, but nothing beats actually doing it yourself. And that's the fundamental problem, I think, is that we don't have enough successful entrepreneurs that do courses back with kids coming through. And that's why, Mike, I don't know if you know or not, but I do a little bit of stuff with the University of Exeter. And I'm looking to do more. And that's some of their later years on entrepreneurship. and running a business and some of the things. Like 2 years ago, I put on three apprentices during the course, little funny story. And all three of them weren't ready for the workplace. Now, their mental health wasn't sufficient, their physical health. They were frightened about taking the steps. And when I look back into what they'd learnt, yes, English and math and basic stuff, but there was nothing about money. There was nothing about financing. There was nothing true marketing or anything that was inspirational around marketing. There was absolutely zero on sales. Now, you name me one business on the planet where sales isn't the number one skill that you've got to have that decides whether you live or die as a business. And these people have zero. And I'm not blaming anybody. It's just the structure of the institution of education that's fundamentally not fit for purpose in the 21st century.
But yeah, well, there's a knock-on effect because that's because politicians these days are just politicians as well. They go from school to politicians. So actually they don't know to change the rules and the curriculum, et cetera. So, you know, it's all a knock-on effect. I study economics. I look big picture and analyze everything. And so if ever you need any help with what you're doing in that capacity, that's something I'd like to get involved in as well. So, I see it from a prism of sales and marketing, you know, which is, a different prism than some people see it as. I also was in a tech startup for 10 years, which grew massive as well. So, got a lot of real life practical skills that I like to put into my education and not just theory or hypothesis or whatever, because like you say, knowledge is great when it's in your head, but until you apply it, it's just knowledge. But once you apply it with massive action, you get what I call the true wisdom, you know, the real learning from the applied knowledge, and especially from the analysis of the applied knowledge. So I'm all into that. I'm all into the super hyped up learning and knowledge that you get from the learning and then the application and then the analysis of the learning and then the tweaking of the application and the analysis of the tweaking of the application and it, like a funneling system. So it's, you end up with some real gold, a bit like the gold. I'm watching Aussie Gold Hunters at the moment on the telly, and like they get a load of mud, they stick it through a system, filter it around, blah, 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 blah. And eventually you get a little pot of gold. And that is pretty much like how knowledge works, like, you know what I mean? Over the load of mud, you end up with a bit of gold, a little tiny bit of gold, but it takes you a lot of filtering to get there.
And oddly enough, Mike, my family had a gold mine in Australia right up until my early days. So they worked in the gold mining industry in where I was born in Australia.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I love watching that program because I love watching just crazy, eccentric people going about their life in strange ways. And it's fascinating to me. And I might go out there one day with a metal detector on holiday and just because they have private lands where you can get a small number of dollars, like a fishing license. You get a gold license. You just go find some nuggets, like, you know.
I've got a customer that I signed up into the trading system that does exactly that. So he's got his own mine and you get your little pan and away you go.
Sounds interesting. So I might do it one day because I just think it'd be an interesting experience. But moving on to the COVID and the lockdown and pivoting and all of that, you've got a structure, a big organization, tentacles in different countries, all of that sort of thing. So I think you're the man to ask, really, about how the COVID has affected that, what sort of pivoting you had to do, how has managing people virtually from the real world changed, and all of those sort of things. Give us a little bit of a thought process about, I'm sure you've analysed what's happened in the last year and all of that. What was your end of year review and your beginning of year plan for this year? What did that look like for you?
So, Mike, hit the nail on the head. I sent out a survey, and we had about 6,200 respondents. So it was a big enough sample to get a pretty much decent idea. And when I speak around the world and talk to people in other fields, these numbers are pretty much reflective of this survey. So the sample was big enough. The essence of the sample was roughly just over 40% of people that own a business during 2020 did as well, if not better, than what they did previously. That was about 42% from memory. There was another group, about 41%, just over, had been that badly affected that they were almost obliterated. And these were particularly in tourism, in
travel,
airlines.
All the frontline businesses that got affected with the stoppage of things.
Retailers, what have you. So yeah. There's about 41% of them were just absolutely obliterated. And then there was about 17% in the middle that were a little bit frightened. They were like living in a cave. They'd look outside the entrance of the cave every now and again to see if it was safe or not to come out. And they were exploring what it was that they were going to do. But the interesting number was that the 42% that were doing as well, if not better, were doing over 80% of what the 100% used to do. If you think that number through.
Yeah, well, so basically they swallowed up the stuff that people vacated. They swallowed up and took over pretty much.
There's been some people that have absolutely made a killing out of COVID. And I guess it comes back to some of the smart people that I've spoken to over the years always tell me, and they have one theme going, is that they always made their most money during a period of adversity. And because they looked beyond the adversity and saw what the opportunity was rather than hiding in the cave. So I just watched the thing on Netflix the other night on Donald Trump, oddly enough. And I'm not saying whether you like him or hate him or whatever, but one thing is that he's certainly not a career politician, and he always looked for opportunity during adversity. And there was an interesting thing on 9/11 and what he did during that period, which was quite interesting. And then another thing as a result of the GFC, the global financial crisis. So getting back to the point, though, so these people and I know you use the word pivot, and I hear the word pivot a lot. I personally don't like the word. I much prefer that businesses act nimbly, or
be created.
Yeah, because pivoting means that, you know, whatever it was, your plan A wasn't well thought enough through, that you have to have plan B. You know, you've got to pivot from plan A to plan B or plan C or whatever that happens to be. That's my connotation on it. So if you're a little bit more agile, a little bit more nimble, you can be like the Titanic and see the iceberg ahead. But if you take corrective action in time, you can avoid the iceberg. And even if you hit the thing, if you're a little bit on your feet and thinking, there was a lot of things that the Captain Smith at the Titanic could have done, even after the fact, that would have stopped it from either sinking, or if he couldn't have done that, to get a lot more people off the ship and not lost all the people on board.
And got them into another ship. If actually they were better planned and prepared, and they could have had everyone, just like I've seen an invention recently, which was amazing, Grenfell Tower, which was a big disaster recently, somebody's created like a parachute backpack landing thing, where you put it on your back and you roll out the window and you pull the cord, the central force of gravity or balance or whatever means that you land on a bit like an airbed or whatever, like, you know. And so if people who built these high towers thought about it properly enough, innovated properly enough, created properly enough, and these things are avoidable. So 100% agree with you regarding preparation and nimbleness.
Well, and there's a couple of examples, Mike, and I'll just share them just quickly. So I've got a Bulgarian sock manufacturer, makes reinforced toes and heels in quality socks. About a £1.75 million turnover business. During COVID, he saw the opportunity and thought, the machinery that I've got right now and the skill set that I've got with my staff, I could easily make PPE equipment with the same machinery. So when he first heard of this back in January and February of last year, he converted his whole machinery into PPE And his turnover for the year last year was nearly $7 million. So he's gone from a $1.75 million to a nearly $7 million turnover business with exactly the same factory, with exactly the same staff, with exactly the same machinery. So he hasn't been any pivoting. He's just thinking outside the nine dots.
Created.
What can I do? That was sample number one. Sample number two, and bring it back to a very small scale. I've got a photographer, does lovely photo prints. When we went into lockdown, couldn't get out and do the photography. You know, lost all the scene. Noticed on a Zoom call that most of the people didn't have a background in place. And so now that photographer takes photos of interesting subjects, is collaborating with a printer that does big AO-type prints on a static background that you can just wheel around the house if you want to, you know, you put the background behind you and away you go. Because some of the media cards that people have for those false backgrounds don't work as well. And you see people, they move their head and the background follows them. So there's another example of someone that, you know, they're a time-based business, a photographer, spotted an opportunity. So they're still doing what they're doing, the photography, but now making Zoom backgrounds so that when you have a Zoom call, it looks a little more professional. So there's a couple of quick examples, Mike, on what I call being a little nimble or being a little agile. And there must be things, if you think your whole business through, where you can be that rather than have to throw everything out and start again.
Yeah, definitely, 100% agree with you. I've got a client, a friend, a new connection of mine, who's just created me one of those electronic backgrounds, you know, because I used to put in a picture of the Welsh flag, and I used to have the same problem with it disappearing and stuff because I haven't got a green screen, which is why I made my own version of the background, you know, just a bit of Welsh behind me because I'm a Welsh dragon, and that's my USP when I crack America with speaking on stages and stuff, which I'm already doing through Clubhouse. But, you know, that Welshness, the uniqueness, the authentic you. I'm a mad, passionate Welsh sports fan. You know, I follow Wales in music, and you know, I'm a big Tom Jones fan and Charlotte Church. Anyone who comes from Wales and impacts in the world in some way, I'm all over them, and I support them because I'm patriotic, and why not? And everyone loves the Welsh dragon and all that. So it's a great, you know, it's all about being authentically you, but also finding, you know, a gap in the market. And I think, in the market for a Welsh speaker in America, they love the accent, they love my tones because it's raw and it's real and it's not Queen's English or polished or whatever I say and I think how I feel, and I think that's important. But I just had somebody create me a background with a caricature, you know, with my glasses on and that sort of thing. I've got to get a green screen or something now to replace this with the more professional looking one. Going up levels, you know, I'm going from championship to premiership to, you know, Champions League in the speaking world. And so I'll just keep adapting and improving, you know, all of the things I think I need to do to get the, you know, to get to, you know, Super Cup champions, you know, global winners, like, you know, from a football and sporting sense, like, you know. But yeah. I'm passionate Welsh, but I'm also passionate British. My grandfather's from Yorkshire. My grandmother's from Dublin, Ireland, so I'm a big British Lions and Ireland, Britain and Irish Lions fan, and that's coming up this year, big rugby fan, a big sports fan in anything, you know, one of the best days of my life is behind me, 2005 Grand Slam champions, where Wales, I was born in 77, which is just the heyday of the 70s, I grew up listening about all of the 70s and everything. I didn't really experience it. But then 2005 changed my life. It was one of the maddest days of like my existence. A country, just after a long time deprived, going nuts, very similar to the country going nuts when England and Wales Cricket Board won the Ashes in 2000 and whenever it was as well, you know, after a long time coming. These days, as a sports fan, as a people fan, as a fan of atmosphere and enthusiasm and energy, and what sets me on fire, like, you know what I mean? So I have these things, they inspire me consistently. I'm inspired by my flag, I'm inspired by like success and victory. Opposite me, what I'm looking at right now is the map of the world, and when I got red pins in, where I'm connected to people all around the world, and my mission is to fill up the map full of red, so there's nowhere in the map that I'm not connected with people. So that's my mission, and It's one that I love. It keeps me energized. It keeps me on Clubhouse for 20 hours a day, or like I'm on either Zoom or Clubhouse 20 hours a day. So I'm literally networking and talking and speaking and offering service and advice and help, like literally 20 hours a day at the moment. Whereas I used to be a part-timer, I used to just do it 16 hours a day. But now I've ramped it up a bit, like, you know, because Clubhouse is just amazing. So that's why I called before this conversation to get on it. And I don't advise anyone to get onto Clubhouse. I tell them they have to. It's no choice. It's just the way it is. You know, if you want to be part of an unbelievable movement, and you got so much value to give, and everyone's just dropping value after value, dropping bombs of knowledge. So not only can you help others, which is what my main mission is in life, you can also learn off loads of other people who are all there looking to help you. So you would go down a storm. I've already got a massive following. You can tag me in as a co-moderator, and I can bring my crowd straight away. I'm doing loads of co-moderating on podcasting, on social media, on sales and marketing, on global networking, on speaking and coaching and all sorts of things. So you will love it in there. So get on the platform. I look forward to
I'll have to have a look, Mike. That's for sure. So
yeah, definitely. I'm at Mike Armstrong on Clubhouse. And you'll probably be at John Attridge. Do you ever have problems getting your name, John?
No, there's not too many of us floating around. It's not like I've got a good old Jones or Smith or one of those. So I don't have that problem usually.
Well, I would definitely advise you to get on there as at John Attridge. And then when people hear and listen to this in the future, check out Johnny. He'll be on Clubhouse. As at John Attridge, hopefully, or maybe at John Attridge 1 or 2 or UK or BBX, probably at John Attridge BBX is actually what I would advise him to be on. I'd also advise you to get one of your staff members on there, just as at BBX, and then, you know, whoever's head of marketing or sales or whatever, they can go on there in their own time as well. But all you got to do is buy him a SIM card with a different number. You can have a phone number for the account. So there's some strategy in there for you, John, which, you know, once you get on there, you'll understand what I'm talking about, and you'll try and get everyone in your organization on there. Because
you've spoken with a passion about it, and I've had a few people talk to me, so I must check it out.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, we talked a little bit before we started the recording about, you know, how we can get our organizations, Intrabiz and BBX, doing some more stuff together in the networking and event space and all of that. You know, the strategy for shutting the room down with that expo, is there any reason why you have to put a deadline on it? Or why not just keep it open forever? Why not just stick all your BBX customers on it forever and just have a global community online of all of your members?
Well, we do that already, Mike, for everybody that's already a customer. So this is just a highlight event. This is about the Quantum Leap business show. Which will finish on the 31st of January. So selected people who want to sell spare capacity. Remember, when I go back to those numbers, 43% want to do something different. So for whatever reason, there's 41% that can't do anything at the moment. So they're there, but they can't operate. So this show is designed for those that can and have found another little niche to follow. And so that's why it's targeted at those specific people at the moment. But the whole thing with the show, Mike, it's not just for the platform, it's for the knowledge. You know, if you go in there, some of the events, just quickly, I've spoken, you know, Alan Peace, which I've talked about. I had Major General James Short, who took the British Army into Bosnia, worked with the UN. He had, you know, interesting stuff on planning and whatnot for anybody that owns a business. I had Kevin Byrne that started Checker Trade from his shed and sold it for 78 million quid. I've got people like John Scholl, 49 years with the Service Institute of the USA. What an organisation that is. Jeff Fenwick, 3 weight divisions world champion boxer, who currently trains Mike Tyson. Dr. Patrick Antoine, who's on the board of CARICOM. So there's some wonderful guests on the show. Even there's Bernie Davies, one of your Welsh compadres. And,
yeah, Intimist franchisee director Bernie. I listened to her chat. I listened to all those people that you mentioned. I listened to all of them, and they added great bombs and great value. And you've actually got a YouTube channel. Plug that, and people can go back there and listen, can't they?
Yeah, just Quantum Leap on YouTube, and the Quantum Leap Business Show. And we're building the resource center with knowledge and ideas and inspiration. That's the whole thing, you know, with COVID, getting back to our original question, you know, you've got to do something a little bit different to get a better result. The world is changing and has changed forever in the way that we're going to be doing business going forward, as you would expect. You know, this is not the first time we've had global innovation caused out of crisis. If you think back, you know, we've had wars, we've had GFCs, we've had epidemics previously, the Black Plague. You know, imagine what everybody would have been so scared if that was on social media back then.
Yeah.
You know, mind-boggling. You know, going back to the invention of the wheel and the people running around in their caves, how do I get the message out about all this sort of stuff? So this is just natural evolution. But people in business will have to do something a little bit different in order to get a better result. Gone are the days if you continue to do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always got. And so that would be the message that I'd leave to people with one thing. And that's another book that changed my life many, many years ago, was called The 80-20 Principle by Richard Koch, K-O-C-H. It's a thin read. It only takes a couple of hours, but the basic principles changed my life forever in how I looked at business. And back in COVID, this time last year, you know, we thought, well, we're under lockdown, what we're going to do? So we adopted the 80-20 rule with our customers to see which were the 20% of our customers that were going to drive 80% of our revenues, that had the ability to be one of the 43% that were going to thrive during COVID. And then we focused 80% of our account manager and focus and marketing time on those group of people. And that's enabled us to get through COVID. And so that'd be a strong recommendation for anybody out there. Focus on the 20% of the activities that drive 80% of your results. Focus on the 20% of customers that give you 80% of your revenue. Focus on using that 80-20 rule to streamline the way and the way you fire a 303 into your business rather than a shotgun.
Yeah, definitely. And that's awesome advice. And that's a great place to leave it, really. I actually got quite a bit of interest in information and knowledge about a 90-10 split as well, which is, you know, the 10%ers of the world and the 10% of businesses that don't fail and all that sort of thing. I've got, you know, every website I look at, 10% of them are good and 90% of them are rubbish. So if anyone wants to check me out and get in touch with me on that, MikeArmstrong.me, how do people get in touch with you, John? What's the best way you want to send them to? Is it LinkedIn? Is it your website? Where do you send them?
Yeah, so on LinkedIn, it's just John Attridge, as it's spelt in the name section here on Zoom. Or through bbxuk.com, which is our website and resource center. So, or through yourself, Mike, because obviously we're connected up. So, yeah. Anybody wants to say hello, more than welcome to connect and collaborate.
Yeah, brilliant. And I've already shared a couple of your videos on my YouTube channel under some of my playlists, because that's what I do with my connections. But I may well go through it all and add them all in, actually, because mine's just a resource as well for people. So the more I can help you increase your profile and include more resource into my resource, the better, actually. So, definitely, it's been great to connect with you, and I think you've got another meeting to go to now. So after that, have a think about some of the things we talked about. I'll set up a meeting with Tracy as well, and next time you come along, we can explore some of your ideas, bounce them off some of hers, and just see how we can, you know, get you more involved, and us more involved in BBX, and you more involved in the Intrabiz platforms that we offer.
I always say that, Mike, 1 and 1 always equals 3.
Definitely. Brilliant. All right, then. You have a great day, John, okay?
Cheers, Mike. Lovely talking to you.
And you. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye now.